Sports Radio 93.1 FM, KTIK, New Plymouth, Boise, 1350 AM. Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Michael Fisher, you know the drill. It's near a weekend in the summer.
Did he get another three-day weekend?
And guess what happens? Bob Beeler gets a three-day weekend.
Boise State starts, what, the first week of September? So he's got two more of these?
It's coming up. I think he might be done with taking these
Are
trips.
Are we sure? It's summer.
He's taking a trip.
It's summer.
Yeah, but I think he has to get into the football frame of mind. He can't just take off anymore. He actually has to bunker down, get ready to call these games, and no longer live life to the fullest.
So good luck with that.
So with Bob not there.
Remind me this next Friday when Bob's not here.
Yeah, true. I'm not 100% sure Bob's not here anyway. Mike Prater's in the Bob seat, which is not the seat you usually sit in. So you cool over there?
We're mixing things up a little bit. I'm sitting over here in Caves' seat. It's a little weird.
Hey.
I've got to fix this seat. I've got to fix the computer.
You want to mess with the seat? I know your guys' relationship can be contentious at times. Can you, like, booby trap the seat?
I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
You can
put a virus on this computer.
Trust me, we already got problems with that in this building, so I wouldn't advise that. Yesterday, Boise State had a close scrimmage, while there was also seven preseason games going on in the NFL. Now, part of me always wanted college football to have a preseason game because, hey, who wouldn't want to see like a preseason tune-up, even if it's against like a Division II opponent or an FCS opponent? Hey, a preseason game to see the squad, even though the game wouldn't count. But you know what? Yesterday made me change my mind. Because while watching the seven preseason games, you know what I realized? Well, I didn't just realize this, but it just really sets home. You watch a lot of bad penalty-filled football, right? You saw a lot of it.
Yeah, I definitely watched the Bears game, and it was bad. I watched a little bit of a couple of games on the NFL Network replays last night. I had to force myself. You shouldn't have to force yourself to watch football. You do have to force yourself to watch football this time of year. It was bad. It's not good. But, you know, good things did happen last night. Bad things did happen last night. And I guess they play these for a reason so the owners can get a lot of money, right?
Yeah, the good moments are fun, but they're just good in the moment because we realize that it's preseason. But when you take a look at the closed scrimmage, or at least hear what was said, the closed scrimmage frees you from the responsibility of actually having to watch the bad parts. It saves you time, and I'm in this for time. Time is money. If you save time, that's a good thing. And the good moments of whatever happens behind those closed doors that we don't see, those good moments become legendary because there's no video. Like, there's something to be said for us not seeing something, and it becomes more of a legend, a la this Cedric Wilson catch that apparently happened yesterday in the Boise State closed scrimmage. This is Coach Harsin talking about the Cedric Wilson catch.
Yeah, it's hard to describe. Yeah, that's one. It was a little fade ball, and it was back, kind of a back shoulder ball, and went up, and he elevated. I don't know how high. He elevated, and it was one of those kind of behind the back, behind the head, stuck in the palm, and defenders kind of got his legs out from underneath him, and he comes down with the foot in bounds and with the ball in his hands. It was everybody out there, defense, didn't matter who you were, all right, whatever family members were in there, I mean, they dropped whatever they had in their hands, and it was a great play.
I mean, that must have been nuts. Everybody just, hey, I don't care about the block that I was engaged in. Oh, my God, Cedric Wilson did something. Clap your hands.
Let's break down this visual. So when he says elevated, I'm thinking 15 to 18 feet.
Okay.
He's got hands and feet just dangling all over the place.
And his arm went Michael Jordan in Space Jam. It stretched all the way out from like half court to be able to go up and grab it with one hand.
And one foot was literally like above the ground but 12 feet out of bounds. He had 13 defenders on him.
Let your imagination take off, though. And there's something to be said for us not having the video so we can let our imagination kind of tell the story for us. It reminds me a little bit of baseball on the radio where you can leave it a little bit more to the imagination. And that was some of the appeal of, you know, staying up until, you know, 10 o'clock here and Vin Scully called the game on the radio. All those classic stories you hear with baseball. Not only that, but like in baseball, the old school people go out there and say the World Series and the All-Star game used to be more appealing because you never saw the other league. So it was like the imagination coming to life, and you had that buildup of the imagination of what the other league was like.
Exactly.
And then when you got to the World Series, oh my goodness, this is what it's like. So we'll need to see everything sometimes.
hoping the boys would track down this video. We need it's on video somewhere. Yeah, we know it's on the coach's video. They've watched it seven times now. They've analyzed it. They've been in the wide receivers room this morning working on practice, working on the debriefing from last night. So we need proof, Chris. We need to sit on an investigative team and get proof of this catch.
But do we? Because I got me to thinking of some of the other sports moments where really there's no video, but the fact that there's no video really highlights the legend of the story. The Dream Team apparently played this game in 1992, where the members of the Dream Team played a inter-squad scrimmage within themselves, and legend says that the competitiveness of this game, I mean, keep in mind, you got like Michael Jordan going up against Magic, going up against Charles Barkley, who's also on that team. Apparently, the competitiveness of this game was unlike anything that's ever been seen before and has been seen since. But since we don't have video of it, we can't dispute those reports. We just have to accept the legend as is.
You asked me this morning when you came in, you said, do you recall any kind of sporting event that we didn't see, but the legend has grown, kind of setting this thing up. And I Googled greatest sporting moments never seen. Yeah. That's that, like the first 15 entries were that basketball game. I think that might be the greatest moment never seen. Probably the collection, obviously the collection of basketball talent was the greatest it's ever been. And I went back and read some of the stuff. They got after it. They were competitive. It got a little feisty. It literally was the greatest game. And maybe there was some hyperbole and some exaggeration. So I agree with your point. Mm-hmm. If we'd have came out and seen the video, we probably said, well, it just looks like a practice. Oh, they got a little chippy here, a little chippy there. No, 25 years later or whatever the number is, it's the greatest game nobody ever saw.
And then there's also the Wilt Chamberlain 100-point game, right? Because I've never seen – it's not like they put that on NBA TV. Have you ever seen it, Fish? Like
no.
NBA TV classics?
I've only seen him holding up the sign with the 100 on it. That's the classic image, I think.
Yeah. Nobody knows any of the baskets that were made. Like, there may have been a freeze frame of an underhand free throw somewhere along the line, but nobody has seen that game besides the people who were there from start to finish.
That would be spectacular, too.
Yeah, scoring 100 and actually needing to score 100 in that game. So that's another thing that has taken off and continued to be a legend because we haven't seen it.
Did Babe Ruth ever really call that home run shot?
I don't know. We see the picture, right? There's one picture of it.
There's one really, really fuzzy picture where he's got kind of his arm out. I think that legend may have grown over time, but that's certainly a legendary moment in sports that may or may not have some physical evidence, some visual evidence that we've grown the legendary story.
So have we really just put this Cedric Wilson catch in extreme hyperbole?
Yes.
We put it in the same sentence as the Dream Team in 92.
Yes.
We just put it in the same sentence as Will Chamberlain's 100-point game. We called him Babe Ruth. He's basically the same thing.
See?
Right?
That's what happens when you don't see the
catch.
But
he was 16 feet in the air with his hand another 12 feet in the air with 13 defenders on him.
You can keep building this up to whatever we want to make it. But the whole point is, like, I don't want fans subjected to full season prices for a sub-quality product. That's what would be a preseason. Right? In the NFL, you're not getting really a discount for these games. You're still paying to go to them, and you're seeing bad football. It'd be same in college. You'd see maybe the starters for a couple of series, then you'd see a lot of, you know, the second stringers and third stringers. And I don't need to watch it for the needle in the haystack moment. You know what? The needle in the haystack moment can be a moment of legend. I might never see the Cedric Wilson catch. I'll see some during the regular season for sure. It might not be any greater than the ones that we didn't see,
sure,
but the legend can carry on.
I like it. I like it. Let's build it all summer or all season long.
All right. So Coach Harsin also talked about some of the things that happened in this closed scrimmage. And Avery Williams apparently had a very good game, forcing a couple of turnovers.
You know, simple as that. He's got a motor. He's always going. He's always going to practice. He's always going out there in any type of scrimmage or competitive situation. And no different tonight. You know, the one thing, you know, as a defender, all right, you kind of gauge on defense, all right, how well a player is on that side of the ball by how close he is to it, all right, wherever that ball is. And he's always around the ball. And so tip ball, there was a tip ball, and tip balls are pick balls. You know, he was around that. So tip ball, ball's up in the air, boom, he's around the ball. You know, there's a tackle, kind of a low tackle, offensive guy's going down, ball slips out. Might have hit the ground, don't know, but ball pops out. He's right there, scoops, and, you know, he's out. He's running. And it's just that immediacy, too, of what to do with it. You know, the ball's there, and they work it all the time on defense. He picked it up, and he is gone, and no one's going to catch him. You know, he's out the gate.
Coaches clearly like him. He's somebody who's gotten a lot of attention already in camp, and yep. apparently this was the best that he's looked in this scrimmage here, forcing a couple of turnovers, one of them being a touchdown. But my question is with him, like, what is Avery Williams? Because he's listed as a linebacker on the depth chart, and it's one of the reserve linebackers. But the dude's 5'9", 194 pounds. That's not a linebacker. You can't be a linebacker being that small, can you?
No, and he's definitely that small. I was able to talk to him, I think it was last week, and, you know, he's a nice, thick, good-looking kid, but he's definitely yeah. small. He's definitely not the kind of guy you would put in there. You know, they got the old nickel-slash-stud position. I mean, they can move him around a little bit on defense. And right now he's kind of in a backup role, maybe even a third-string role. We're not going to see a ton of him, but I think we're going to experiment with his athleticism in the back and see where he can play. But eventually, he might be the young – when he gets playing, and let's say he adds 15 pounds. So yeah. what is he then, 210? Might be one of the smallest linebackers in all of FBS football.
Yeah, that'd be kind of a sight to see him lined up with, like, these other mammoths. And you're like, whoa, what is that? Is that a kicker next to a linebacker? So it would be striking just visually to see him that close to the line of scrimmage. People that small aren't usually close to the ball like that.
No, and Gabe Perez is the starting Sam linebacker, and he's about 250 pounds. In person, he doesn't look like it. He's very thin, very tall. So there's a big difference. That's 55-pound difference between your starter and your backup at a position that demands girth.
Yeah, I feel like in football, it's almost becoming positionless defense, and a lot of it, mainly because there's so many different offensive schemes. I took a peek at the depth chart for Troy going into the first game of the year. They have a position that's called a bandit. They have another position that's called like something creative, to the point where like they have three different body types listed at that position. So it makes you just think, okay, depending on what type of offense they're facing, they probably will like mold their defense with personnel that best fits. It was kind of an odd depth chart where, you know, defensive end, defensive tackle, a spear, then a bandit. It's like, these aren't positions of football that I'm used to, but hey, if it works for you.
Sure.
So still a lot of time before the Troy game, but a couple of the things that happened in that scrimmage. We'll get to more of Coach Harsin, including why I think that he will not get the credit that he will deserve this season. That at 2 o'clock, why I think Coach Harsin already will have an underrated season. But up next, the Zeke Elliott suspension. Could that be the thing that cost Roger Goodell his job? That and plus a Boise State injury, a former player injury in the NFL. We'll get the details on that next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Hello, Sports Talk with No Bob. Instead, Mike Prater's in the Bob seat, and Michael Fisher's still hanging out. Tough news, though, for a former Boise State Bronco who now plays for the Denver Broncos and Billy Winn. And it looks like it's an ACL injury, according to @RapSheet on Twitter. That's Ian Rappaport of NFL.com. And that would be out for the season if it's an ACL. And that's exactly the tweet. Billy Winn has suffered a torn ACL last night. Source said what they expected and out for the season. That's rough.
Boy, that is too bad for him. He came in the game. He was actually, there was a bunch of Boise State players in action last night, and he came in to the game and had some pretty quick production. He had a couple of quick tackles. Him and Jerron Johnson were really the only guys that were playing and getting production at the same time. A lot of guys didn't play. A lot of guys had some minor stats, but Billy Winn was out there taking care of business. That is a tough, tough deal. Tough, tough deal. So this is his second team. He's trying to make a spot. He just signed a one-year contract worth about $800,000, if I remember. Tough deal for Billy Winn.
I'd just be so mad. If I got hurt the first game of the preseason and I'm out for the season, you know how mad I'd be?
That's brutal.
Like, I'd just punch in a wall. I'd be kicking the Gatorade cooler, even though my ACL's torn.
You don't want to really be kicking, or you'll break the other ACL.
I
did see a Bears player. I can't remember which one it was. A Bears player was coming off the field last night. He was playing with his knee. Doctors were helping him off the field. He walks over to the sideline and just chucked his helmet, and it literally went flying 30 yards to his left. Probably killed a cheerleader that we haven't read about yet, but he was pretty fired up as well. The emotions.
Yeah.
You know, you're a football player. You've worked your butt off all season. You get in that first game. You're playing live football. Bingo, bango, bongo. You go down, and all of a sudden, you're pretty fired up.
Because all that work in the offseason you put in, all right, this is going to be the year, and it got cut short like that. That's disappointing. But you know who else this season got cut short, and it's not as disappointing? Ezekiel Elliott. As we know, suspended for 6 games, although, again, with appeal, who knows what could happen. It's a part of the domestic violence policy that the NFL put in a few years ago after the Ray Rice situation. But the first part of this story that I want to attack is, could this be the suspension that cost Roger Goodell his job? I think it's the right call to suspend Ezekiel Elliott because, as a league, you've been burned too many times. You had the Ray Rice thing, as I mentioned. You had the Josh Brown thing as recently as last year. With Josh Brown, there was more evidence in the police reports and
self-admission.
With that. Self-admission, too, yes. And that was just one game. The evidence in the police reports in this are a lot more flimsy. And this one is 6. But Zeke, he caught the L for the NFL's mismanagement of the other situations. But this suspension, what it does, it embarrasses Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones, Hall of Fame weekend, he was there. He was out and about doing interviews. He went on record and saying Zeke did nothing wrong. In fact, this is a quote to ESPN.com. He said, "My opinion is that there's not even an issue over what he said / she said. There's not even an issue there." So if you're on record and basically saying that Zeke did nothing wrong and the NFL finds something different or suspends him for 6 games anyway, that's an embarrassment for the owner who put his name out there backing Ezekiel Elliott and Jerry Jones. So in a 2-year span, Roger Goodell has made enemies out of Jerry Jones, who reportedly, according to Pro Football Talk, is furious about this, and Robert Kraft, two of the most powerful owners in the game. So could those two owners have the influence to talk to their other owner friends, sway them to pursue a way to say, hey, Roger Goodell is just not consistent. He's not somebody who's reliable with this. You made enemies out of Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones. I mean, those aren't two run-of-the-mill owners in the NFL.
No, without those two names, I'm not sure I believe the question that we're going to fight over or debate over. But with those two guys in that corner, those are heavy hitters, as you pointed out. Now, Roger Goodell showed up at the Patriots game last night, first preseason game, slides in the back door, just hangs out and has a cocktail with Mr. Kraft and does whatever he has to do. So I thought that was a kind of a BS way of getting that monkey off his back, because you know everybody was saying, well, he can come back now and say, I've been to a Patriots game. With that aside, no, I don't think this will mean the end of his tenure as the commissioner. But you said the key word to me, inconsistency. The league has got to figure out a way, and I think they're trying, but they're not doing a very good job of it, or maybe they're just 10 years behind too late. The consistency is ridiculous. I mean, Ray Rice, after the video, very aggressive punishment, very aggressive offense. I think we can maybe all talk about that one and be on the same page there, although there's some debate there. Josh Brown was one game, right?
One game.
For a guy who admitted he's overly abused his, was it a wife or a girlfriend? I can't remember. Whatever it was.
Significant other.
Significant other multiple times. One game. I don't understand that at all. There was talk that Ezekiel Elliott would be suspended for an entire season. I think this thing will be appealed down to probably 4 games. That's still a pretty significant deal. It's going to cost him somewhere between $3 and $5 million. He's going to have to give some of his signing bonus back. But I'm with you. It's the right call. You go back and read the reports. Yes, the law didn't charge him because they didn't have enough to prove and work their way through the legal system. Mm-hmm. The NFL found enough evidence to prove otherwise. They don't have to deal with the legals, but they found plenty of evidence that things did happen. He did violate the personal conduct policy. I also think, let me throw the question back at you and twist it a little bit.
All right, here we go.
Should Roger Goodell punish Jerry Jones?
Ooh, for going out here and kind of talking out of school in a
way? Yeah, I mean, he was very aggressive in terms of, there's no way we have any evidence. The issue was clear. He was exonerated. He took a very high-profile stage over the last week, including Saturday. I don't know if he mentioned it on Saturday, certainly not during his speech, but it's been coming up all the way up to leading up to it. He was very vocal last week about Ezekiel Elliott and the fact that he was going to be cleared. That's not a good look for the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think. Can you suspend owners?
No. Like, well, you could. Sure, you could.
Did Kraft get suspended for spying?
Well, they suspended Irsay.
I could find him. If I was Goodell, yeah, I'm certainly fine. I don't know if you can suspended Irsay. But again, what does suspending an owner do? What does suspending a GM do? You can certainly find him, though.
Yeah.
I'd find the Cowboys. I'd find him. You're out here commenting on our investigation that we wanted to keep in-house, and you went out here and said some untrue and perhaps damaging things about it.
Absolutely, and I think it creates another rift between the league. All of a sudden, we got another powerful owner and another powerful commissioner not on the same page with a big gap. The NFL, this kind of makes the NFL look bad. And now, in reverse, it makes Jerry Jones look bad. It's just not a good look for the league at all. And for a league that polices socks on the sideline on Sunday afternoons, This is a pretty big, significant public relations gap that they need to take a look at.
6 games for Ezekiel Elliott and Fish. You were telling me before the show that you thought that was just a lot of games.
Damn, it's almost half the season.
Yeah.
I'm with you guys. They made the right decision from being burned in the past, but this is such a bad idea, from what I've seen at least.
In terms of the length of games?
In terms of the length, I mean, 3 games maybe, right? You can't have and you were talking to this player, they need to be consistent. Drugs and alcohol, that's 4 games, and then we go 12 games, then we go a season. But domestic abuse, 6 games, 12 games, yes, they're different, but have a certain policy, shouldn't you? Like, okay, well, everything, first-time offense, 6 games.
See, that's what I wanted to throw out another question, is what is better? And we're still debating this, and the NFL has, a decade and a half of trying to sort through these discipline things. What is better? Is it better to have a uniform policy, like they Panic did after the Ray Rice thing? Oh, we need to win a press conference, so let's go out here and come up with some kind of policy for domestic violence, because it looks like we have no idea what we're doing, so if we act like we know what we're doing, we can at least survive a day. Or is it better to handle these things on a case-by-case and not have a uniform policy that you have to follow? Because I still am one to think that, like, especially in cases of domestic violence,
if you go case-by-case, are so hard then we to get what by. Happened with Josh Brown, where one guy gets 1 game and one guy gets 6 games. Which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, they had that with the policy in place. So they tried to have it both ways. They tried to go with, we have a uniform policy in place, but we're just not going to follow it. That's worse.
Yeah.
Like, that's the worst thing you can do, is have a policy and then just ignore it.
But so, you can't have an NFL where a guy smokes pot twice and he's gone for the year, and you have a guy who's beating up his ex-girlfriend and he's gone for half a year.
I mean, I do think there's something to be said for that. It sounds silly. They'll clap back with, well, rules are rules, and that was collectively
also
bargained.
Tom Brady missed 4 games for deflating balls, and Ezekiel Elliott only got 2 extra games.
You're sounding like the NCAA here with, like, who knows what the punishment will be for who knows what. But, like, the one thing with the drugs, and why I'll take that one out of it, is because that's something that's collectively bargained. Roger Goodell did not come up with the drug policy. That's something that's negotiated between the league and the Players Association. But when it comes to these things, that's something that's in the league office's hands.
Yes, they do. I mean, and obviously they do have this new policy. I think they've been tweaking it for a couple of years now, when they came out with it in 14 or 15, and they're trying to tweak it. The answer to your question, Chris, is absolutely. They have to have a black and white policy.
Really?
But, you know, I think the last chapter of that policy needs to be, you know, individual circumstances that can come into play. Do you have a great track record, and is this your first time? I'm just being very vague here. Or do you have a serious track record of being of these kinds of incidences? You know, Ezekiel Elliott had a lot of stuff on his plate over the last 2 off seasons. They didn't take into account pulling down the girl's skirt and exposing her breast. They didn't take that into account. That was caught on video, because that didn't enhance the penalty. Other issues that they've had to deal with. He pushed somebody in a bar. He's had other issues. This might be just a collective thing. This is a kid who has a track record. There's a lot of concern about what he is. So I think you have to have that policy. You start there, but then maybe you tweak it right or left depending on the individual circumstances.
Maybe this will be known as, like, the Ben Roethlisberger punishment. Remember back in 2010, he got a 6 game, was, I think, cut down to 4 because there was just a lot of stuff that kept coming out, and it was basically the warning shot, like, Ben, you better get your act together. And eventually, I guess he did, although I'm not, like, close to Ben Roethlisberger.
Sure.
So I don't know if he's a better guy, but at least he hasn't had, a lot of public incidences since then.
I think this is part of the Ezekiel Elliott situation. He's a young guy. He's a star in the league. The NFL needs this guy. They need him to be a healthy, contributing, valuable member of their family for the next 8 to 10 years. And if he's out there running around doing stupid things, this is a wake-up call. And then you got an owner who's basically entitling him all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
So you got to come back and say, dude, get your act together. We need you. We want you. You got 6 months to reflect on it. Come back and be a better person, and let's move on.
Watch the U.S. National Arena soccer team against Brazil at CenturyLink Arena tonight at about 7 o'clock, presented by Delta Dental of Idaho. See some of America's top indoor talent, including several players with a Major League Soccer experience and several Idaho soccer products. Tickets start at $15. Hit CenturyLink ArenaBoise.com to purchase your tickets, or you can call 208-424-9300 right now. Be the third caller to win, plus a gift card from Beef O'Brady's. Get to Beef O'Brady's on the northwest corner of Overland and Eagle Road to score lunch or dinner. Beef's for business lunches, sports watch parties, or friends and family. An award-winning menu, huge video wall, big screen TVs await. JP approves of it. Beef O'Brady's in Meridian. Good food, good sports. Again, 208-424-9300. Up next, a sports update on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
The Ticket Sports Update.
This Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by Idaho Foot and Ankle Associates in Boise, Meridian, and Nampa. They measure success one foot at a time. It's three NFL preseason games tonight, featuring a total of eight players with connections to Idaho. Former Broncos Darian Thompson, Dante Dion, Jonathan Moxie, Jeremy McNichols, Doug Martin, Georgia Loca, and Chancellor James Will all be in action, along with Idaho State grad Evan Smith. Last night, there were several Idaho players in action. However, bad news for one of them, Billy Wynn, carted off the field. It's now been ruled he tore his ACL in his right knee. He is going to miss the rest of the season. Mike Prater, you've done a great job on KTIK.com, putting together a list of all the players in action throughout the first week of the preseason. Anyone stand out to you last night?
Well, I mean, the Billy Wynn thing was pretty brutal and pretty sad. There really wasn't a lot of production. Most of these guys did not play last night. Jerron Johnson, the new cornerback for the Jacksonville Jaguars, or safety for the Jaguars, had a couple of tackles and assists, probably because he was getting more playing time as a new guy. You know, Paradis Leno, all the superstars that we know of, did not play last night. Shea McClellan did not play last night. Vallejo did not play, did not suit up because of a shoulder injury in camp. Aaron Grimes, a cornerback for the Eagles out of the University of Idaho, had three tackles and a half a sack last night. But the big star for the Idaho connection would have been Taysom Hill, quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. 4 of 5, 69 yards, a touchdown pass, 2 rushes, 14 yards, and 1 Lambeau leap.
There you go. That's all you need. If you did the Lambeau leap, that's all you need.
If I'm a first-year preseason guy for the Packers and I'm at home and I throw a touchdown pass in the fourth quarter of a crappy preseason game and I'm the ninth-string quarterback, I'm doing the Lambeau leap.
You better.
I think every person – I think – all 11 scrubs were on the field, and I think all 11 scrubs went and jumped in the stands because they were going to take advantage of that Lambeau leap last night. So good for Taysom Hill. He actually looked pretty good. He was pretty mobile and pretty smooth, but he's certainly not going to replace Aaron Rodgers.
You have all that work you put in to make it to this point where you're on an NFL preseason roster. You put up with camp. You put up with vets trying to take advantage with you at every chance you get. You get on the field in a preseason game, yes, you are jumping into the stands and doing the Lambeau leap. You can tell all your family members about that well after you're done playing football, because who knows how long your NFL career could last, but you did the Lambeau leap.
If I'm a visitor, I'm doing the Lambeau leap. I don't even care if they're going to throw beer on me, cheese. I'm doing the Lambeau leap. I did it. Playing for the other team, it doesn't matter. They let me do the Lambeau leap. Now, actually, more breaking NFL news, not suspension-related. A couple wide receivers switched teams today. The Bills have traded former first-round pick Sammy Watkins to the Rams in exchange for Rams corner E.J. Gaines and a second-round pick in the 2018 draft. Then they turned right around in a separate trade. They acquired wide receiver Jordan Matthews and a 2018 third-round pick for their starting corner Ronald Darby. Watkins has missed 11 games for the last two seasons. Besides fantasy impact, this could have serious Madden impact, Chris Lewis. Got a tweet from Colin Boyd. Said, hey, Chris, we played Madden on the Super Bowl Sunday. You beat me 7-0, 2-bit at quarters. But the 7 you scored was from Sammy Watkins on a curl route, and my Rams traded for Watkins today.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's interesting for fantasy reasons because the Bills are one of my teams, and Sammy Watkins is a big part of it. You got Tyrod Taylor with a little bit of mobility. You got the Jukes of LeSean McCoy back there, so it's a good Madden team. But now he goes to the Rams. Are they a good Madden team now?
No. Have you seen Jordan Goff? Have you seen Jared Goff?
I don't know what his rating is, but he's still a second-year quarterback. If he took a leap, nobody would be shocked. You have Todd Gurley. Gurley not a good running back?
I watched last year.
But there was a lot of people near the line of scrimmage.
You don't have an offensive line.
So now you got Sammy Watkins on one side.
You don't have an offensive line.
You got Tavon Austin. If they don't trade him, running around doing slot
receiver
things.
They can't trade him in his $42 million contract.
Yeah, that's true. That's a tough one. See, I don't mind that team as a Madden team now. And for fantasy reasons, yes, up Todd Gurley because there's not as many eight-man fronts. Up Sammy Watkins.
Man, it depends on that ankle health.
Because, I mean, regardless, you're going from Buffalo to L.A.
For Sammy Watkins, it's an upgrade.
Yeah, Sammy Watkins' life, it's an upgrade. And for football conditions, it's just hard to throw in Buffalo late in the year. L.A., that's nice, man.
But Jordan Matthews, he's probably, a good number two, maybe a flex guy. He's gone, right?
Yeah, I think he was buried on the Eagles' depth chart because they brought in Alshon Jeffrey. Yeah. They brought in Torrey Smith. They say Nelson Aguilar, the receiver I went out of USC a few years ago.
With his six drops last year or however many he had. But
they say he's made the leap. So you're kind of buried the fourth receiver.
So is Tyrod Taylor upgraded then? Is Matthews a swap for Watkins better? I mean, it is for health reasons to keep a player on the field. Yeah. But in terms of talent?
Nah,
he's not fast enough. And you already have Anquan Boldin, so now you have two guys who can't get open, but they're open, as Chris says.
Wow.
You just got to trust that they're going to catch the ball.
I'm not a big fan of either one of those quarterbacks. Jared Goff is terrible. I haven't liked him since college. And Tyrod Taylor, I think, was a stretch of reach in the NFL, but the Rams and the Bills.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the PGA Championship second round is underway, and good news for Boise State golfer Graham Dillette. Finished his second round. He was 2 over, which means he's 1 over for the tournament. Projected cut line is 4 over par, so he should be safe to go into the weekend. The real surprise, Kevin Kisner is your leader. He sits at 8 under. He has a 4-shot lead on second, who is co-leader Thorbjørn Olesen. He is teeing off right now, but Kevin Kisner would be tied for second with his own round today. He's 4 under par.
And Phil Mickelson, for the first time in 22 years, doesn't make the cut at the PGA.
Unreal.
He played some practice rounds and some shorts this week. Those legs did not look good. It's time for Phil to go to the beach and get a tan.
Or spend some more time with his daughter while she's graduating.
Yes.
There's also that thing. Now, I'm throwing it to you guys because you both compete in this fantasy golf thing.
Yes, sir.
So, how are you doing, Prater, compared to JP and Fish?
I'm in the middle of the road. I'm not sure how I'm doing today. I'm in the front half of the last third. Does that make any sense?
Front half of the last. That's like when people say he played the whole half, and I get confused. Did he play a whole? He played half.
I'm not going to
use the double fractions on me.
I'm not going to comment on where Fish and JP are. Fish can.
Yeah, well, JP's second to last, and I am third to last. I have a 1-shot lead on JP. Though I do have to mention, I had the first pick, and JP had the last pick.
Who had Brooks Koepka, and where are they at?
They are tied for second right now with Brooks Koepka, but he has fallen apart. He's 3 over on the course today, Chris Lewis. He's fallen apart.
Brooks Koepka's the man.
We got a text from Richard Callaway. So the LA Rams, great move. Watkins is a warm weather player. He will be the top receiver in the NFC West this year. Remember, Rich and Caldwell backs his statements up. So there you go. Another one to mark down, Chris Lewis. Top receiver in the NFC West.
Who's he competing with?
Larry Fitzgerald, Doug Baldwin.
It's not going to happen with his quarterback, I promise you that.
All right, so not at least the top stats. I like Sammy Watkins as a player. I have him on my fantasy team. I might keep him now. That's how big of a move it is. Tickets, first pitch, and food. What's the most you've ever fed your face? Answer the question on the Caves and Prater Facebook page. Our winner will join Idaho Sports Talk co-host and my co-host for today, Mike Prater, to throw out the first pitch at Monday night's Boise Hawks game at Memorial Stadium. You'll get 4 tickets to the game and the Feed Your Face promotion. That's at all you can eat on select concession items through the fourth inning. Random winner will be selected today on 93.1 FM, The Ticket, at 5 o'clock. Up next, we got Quick Hits. Prater and I, we tackle 4 topics, rapid-fire fashion, including why the NFL is apparently easier than the SEC. We'll figure that out next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
Quick Hits. Instead, we got no Bob, so Prater's there. Prater, you ready? Okay, all good. Leonard Fournette said some strong things after his NFL debut Thursday night, and it might not sit well with a lot of other players in the league. What did he say?
I'm a big fan of Leonard Fournette. I think he's a man-child in college, and he's a man-child in the NFL, but he's playing with a lot of other man-childs in the NFL. Last night made his NFL debut as the Jacksonville Jaguars running back, and he came out and said he had a good game. Scored 31 yards, 9 carries, 1 yard touchdown run, but he looked pretty powerful. Came out and said, game's a lot slower than I thought. I was just thinking, what? And I had to go back and look. He thought I was going to be fast. He's been playing in the SEC. That helped me out a lot. To me, it was really, really easy. Now, come on, Leonard Fournette. You played one game, probably against third stringers in this particular case. I don't know what the matchup was last night. Certainly didn't watch you on TV. But you don't come out, and if your first NFL game rushing for 31 yards and 1 touchdown run, a 1-yarder, and say, the game was a lot slower than I thought, and it was a lot easier than I thought as well. I don't think that'll sit well. Let's see what he does for the next three preseason games. And when he goes live in a couple weeks, I would imagine there's some veterans out there that want to show him a little speed and probably want to show him a few things that aren't so easy. So Leonard Fournette, rookie mistake, grow up, be a good pro, but not after one preseason.
Yeah, 9 for 31, there's nothing easy about that. You weren't good.
No.
If you went 9 for 31 and a touchdown, I mean, the touchdown helps the fantasy numbers, but yeah. 9 for 31, you're going to get benched.
Yeah, overall you are. And I didn't see the stats, but I did see him play a couple of plays last night. He's very powerful. He's going to be very physical. I think he's going to be very good in the league. But yeah, last night was just a routine preseason game with a big old fat mouth. Chris.
Topic number two.
We got imaging on this show. I don't know how y'all do it from 3 to 6, but we got little cool bumpers and stuff. So hold up. Wait for the lady to say 2, and now you can go.
I did that last time.
Did you?
I think Bob threw an offside penalty on me. Chris, now that the NBA Christmas Day schedule is out, it's a good one, by the way, as you know. What do you think?
I think I'm going to that noon game in Madison Square Garden when the Sixers play the Knicks. That's first and foremost. Yesterday at this time, I tried to predict the schedule. I got 4 of the 5 right. The only one I didn't get right was the Timberwolves facing the Lakers, because I thought ideally the Timberwolves would face the Sixers. If they didn't face the Sixers, I thought it'd be the Clippers against the Lakers as their last game. But other than that, I think you have the most attractive teams on television. Now, you also have to keep in mind the NFL has a doubleheader as well. It's a Monday Christmas, so Monday Night Football is a thing. Philly plays on Monday night. Oakland plays. Philly and Oakland both play on Christmas, so those fans get to double dip a little bit, which is always fun. But great schedule, good selections, especially if I can predict it, and then I'm right on it. I like being right.
Nice.
Topic number 3.
All right, the PGA Championship, Phil Mickelson did not make the cut. What does it mean that he didn't make the cut?
I think it's a sad, sad day in golf, and JP's going to jump all over me for this, but I think this is officially the end of an era. This is unofficially the end of an era. I was devastated when Tiger Woods was no longer relevant in the game of golf, and Phil Mickelson, now as of today, is no longer relevant in the game of golf. He's still a big name. He's still a big draw. But in terms of his skill on the course, it's just not going to happen. He shot a 79 yesterday, followed it up with a 74 today, 11 over, missing the cut. This is a golf course where he's played really, really well. Coming into this tournament, he had the second best scoring average career-wise of anybody else in this field. And all of a sudden, he goes out and shoots a terrible, terrible score. The 2017 season has been a disaster for him. He finished tied for 22nd at the Masters. He didn't play in the U.S. Open because of what you just said, the graduation. Missed the cut at the Open Championship. It's the second straight time in his career that he's missed the cut at two majors in a season. Phil Mickelson, I hate to say it, is old. I wish we could all be as old as him and as rich as him and as good on the golf course as him. But that's not going to cut it on the PGA tournament, on the PGA Tour. As of now, we're moving on with lots of young guns, very exciting personalities. I like that. But Tiger and Phil are done. It is officially the end of an era.
You say I'll be as rich as him. Should we all have the same financial advisors as him, or do we want different ones so we don't go to jail?
Or gambling habits? Financial advisors and gambling habits? I may have his gambling habits on a much smaller scale. I don't have his financial advisors. Maybe that's a good thing.
Topic number 4.
Chris, you know this question is just near and dear to my heart, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say. How early is too early in the day to eat Chinese food?
Okay. Seems random, but there's a reason I put this question on there. Because Ben Simmons, who's the Sixers' first-round pick from last year, who missed his rookie year, he was spotted at the airport in Philadelphia. There was a picture. Somebody took it of him at the airport, and he was getting Chinese food at 9:30 a.m. At the airport getting Chinese food at 9:30 a.m. Now, Ben Simmons on Twitter commented about this. It said, the real story is, get the facts right, because I was eating rice and chicken. I was not eating an egg roll. So apparently egg roll, eating that in the morning would be just unimaginable. Getting chicken and rice in the morning at 9:30 is at least more acceptable. I'm not somebody who's the biggest fan of Chinese food. I'll be the first to say it. I do like Asian-style cooking, but people like who are within food know Asian-style cooking and Chinese food, definitely different lanes. So I would say that any time before like 10 o'clock at night is too early to eat Chinese food, because it has to be my last option. It has to be like nothing else is open. And, you know, I'm just really starving. Maybe it was a Boise State game that I was out late going home from Bronco game night. that ends at like 2 in the morning and I want some food, then it's acceptable to eat Chinese food. But 9:30 a.m., that ain't me.
I've been guilty. I've been in the airport at 9:30 in the morning, and I've looked at all the other options, and I said, I'm not only going for the rice, I'm not only going for the chicken, I'm going for the egg roll. No problem. Any time of the day, 24/7. Seafood or any kind of, as you put, I like it, Asian-style cooking, bring it on, baby.
All right, we got to get fishing here.
10 what?
P.m. Cause
no,
because
all the
open.
Good Chinese restaurants are closed by then. They close at 9 because it's the mom-and-pop shops. Also, after Bronco game day, they're never open Sunday. I've learned that the hard way several times. So you couldn't be going then. 12 o'clock. I love me some lunch, some beef and broccoli. Oh, man. Killer. But 10 p.m.? Then you're going to Panda Express, and that's not real Chinese food, Chris Lewis.
See, maybe it's the experience of I haven't been in a position to eat good Chinese food. Because, again, Asian-style cooking, as we wrap up quick hits here on Idaho Sports Talk, you can put that, like, glaze on some chicken. That's good. But when you're getting, like, the orange mom-and-pop's chicken? I don't even know what these things are called.
Orange chicken?
Orange chicken. What General Tso's chicken? Y'all can have that. Y'all can hold that.
I went so broke at Boise State when they added a Panda Express and orange chicken.
Just give me some fried rice. I'll take that. That's my favorite thing about it.
So I'm hungry.
Ben Simmons is getting some fried rice. All right, I'll accept. All right, there's no chance that Coach Harsin will get enough credit for the job he'll do at Boise State for their football team this year. Just not a chance. I'll explain why next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. As I typically say, at least a Friday or a Monday at some point in the summer, it's half right.
Some point? You mean every weekend throughout the summer?
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't know whether it'll be a Friday or a Monday because it's a three-day weekend. I just don't know how he's going to maneuver it to be the three-day weekend. Will he take off the Friday or will he take off the Monday?
Shame on him making the voice guy look bad.
I know, right? He's wrong more often than he's right this time of year. So no Bob, instead we got Prater in the popular seats.
You sounded disappointed.
I am not disappointed. In fact, this is the one show that I haven't been able to host. The one host in this building that I've not been able to host a full show with is you, and I've been looking forward to this day for such a long time, and guess what?
There we go.
It finally happened.
All kinds of combinations, mathematical combinations. I think we've exhausted all of them, and this is the final one.
I feel like we just beat, like, Sonic the Hedgehog, too.
We
finally got to the boss level, and we beat the boss. Let's go. Speaking of finally getting to a moment where you can at least celebrate, the Boise State football squad in their fall camp got to the point where they got to do a scrimmage. It was a close scrimmage yesterday. Apparently, Cedric Wilson made everybody just stop what they were doing, drop whatever they had in their hands, and start clapping. It was that good of a catch. And Cedric Wilson, that's saying something because they've seen him do quite a few things in his year plus with Boise State. And if he did something that made their jaw drop, wow.
I'm really excited for this. I'm really excited for this. I think Cedric Wilson not only can have a monster senior season, I think he can have an NFL career.
Yeah.
And Boise State's put a couple of wide receivers in the NFL, and it didn't quite work out. They teased us with great talent, and then they just got there, and it just didn't quite work. I'm not saying that Cedric Wilson's going to go to the NFL and tear it up or it's going to work out, but the stuff on the horizon with this guy, regardless of a legendary catch last night that we never saw or never will see, hopefully, or probably, I'm looking forward to this. But
one thing I brought to Bob yesterday, I'll ask you the same question. Like, is there a player on this team that you would say, and maybe Cedric Wilson's the answer, like the player who's most likely to have a long, successful NFL career on this roster?
Ooh, baby. I think Wilson has definitely got a chance. I think
Bob's choice was Ezra Cleveland.
Yeah.
And he hasn't played yet.
Boise State has a nice track record, especially if you're a four-year starter or left tackle, of putting those guys in the NFL. The path is there, but I'm not going to put a freshman that's never played in the NFL yet. I think it's a possibility. I think it's a chance. I think Mason Hampton might get a camp shot just because of his body and size. I'm not sure he's going to make it. Leighton Vander Esch might get a shot if he blows up big time next year. DeAndre Pierce, I know, is going to try. He's follow Dad's footsteps. But right now, I'm gonna go with Cedric Wilson as my number one guy.
Yeah, that's what made the question come up, is because we're talking about DeAndre Pierce and his dad being an NFL player, and he doesn't exactly have the same size that his dad had.
No.
But, like, all right, does the connection help him going to survive in the NFL for a little bit, or is his size going to limit him? And That's the one of the things. And I was listening to Coach Harsin yesterday, and one thought came to mind, and this conversation sort of leads into it and plays into it. But this season presents a big challenge for a head coach, especially here at Boise State, because of really two realities. And reason number one, what can you really depend on coming into this season if you're a head coach? Like, what can you really depend on? I would argue there's five players that you can really depend on heading into this season. That's Brett Rypien, Cedric Wilson, Mason Hampton, David Moa, and Tyler Horton. That's five players on this team that you can, like, go into the season, you don't have to worry about. You can really depend on and expect great things from those guys.
Okay.
Really, what that translates to on the field, though, is one quarterback-receiver combination, and that's kind of it. There's no other, like, unit in there that you can really depend on going into the season that you just know. No question. I just know that they're going to be able to handle business. And every time he was talking about positional standouts in his meeting with the media yesterday, it was a guy who hadn't really played that much. And that guy is going to have to, at all these different spots, is going to have to play quite a bit this year. So if those units play at a high level, the ones that have an experienced players playing at it, it'll either be because, one, they're extremely talented. And if they're extremely talented, you have to credit the coach because they went out there and found, the staff went out there and found a hidden gem. So it'd either be a coach find, which you have to credit the coach for, or that player will just have been extremely well prepared in whatever spot they are. And again, that is coaching.
Yep.
So a lot of this depends on the strength of the head coach. And again, Boise State will have high expectations anyway, and they're picked to win the Mountain Division. We all know that. But like, a lot of that is banking on coaching.
Absolutely. And I think the fans are banking on coaching this year. Brian Harsin's got a – I don't want to say he's been beaten up. That's way too strong. But there's enough fans out there that are questioning, you know, his past, his play calling, his decision-making here, his decision-making there. We know he's given up play calling to focus on being a head football coach. Mm-hmm. So that's in his place. Everything you just said is in his place. I think the question you're trying to ask is Brian Harsin setting himself up for maybe his best coaching season ever? And I like what he saw. I certainly like what I saw this week and coming out of your guys', you and Bob's video or your audio last night in terms of how he's approaching this week, practicing multiple game night situations, a sense of urgency. He's really trying to pump a lot of energy into this camp. He's talked a lot about don't be a dimmer switch, be either on or off guy, and he obviously wants a lot of on guys on his football field. And I think it's working. I think they're getting those kinds of results. So I think they're heading in the right direction, but obviously we have to wait and see. But everything you're saying, I think, is setting Brian Harsin up for he can either take his career and take his reputation and move it to the next level, or either stay stagnant, lose four tough games on the road. The schedule's a big, big part of what he's got dealing with this year. And then kind of, throw himself at the wrath of the fans again. So I think it can go either way.
Yeah, reason number two on that note was schedule that I was bringing up for why, like, this will be a big challenge for really any head coach, especially here, is that, like, there's no easing in process to it with the schedule. Troy, at Washington State, New Mexico, Virginia, at BYU, at San Diego State, at Wyoming. That's your beginning of the schedule, and take out Virginia from that, which is probably the easiest layup in that group. You could lose, in fact, three of those games you could expect to maybe lose, just the way, like, at Washington State, at BYU, and at San Diego State, you're going into those three games, and certainly a loss plays into the possibility of a result from that game. So not only the tough schedule, you have the difference of opponents. We've harped on this. You have the balanced spread of Troy in the first game. You have the air raid against Washington State. Then you have the absence out of New Mexico within the first three games. So the schedule provides different challenges, plus the fact, and this is something that Coach Harsin got into, and we'll play it in a second, there's going to be really no early schedule routine that they're going to be able to settle in. And for a coach, that matters quite a bit. You have a short week against New Mexico for that third game. That game's on a Thursday, followed by a Friday game against Virginia, then another weird Friday game at BYU where you're traveling. And then you have the thing that coaches hate, which is those back-to-back road games where you're at BYU, then you have to go back, and then you have a travel at San Diego State the next week. So you combine the inexperience, the not that much you can depend on, the tough schedule and the way the schedule doesn't allow you to settle into a routine, there is a lot that can go wrong, and it will take good coaching to overcome those challenges. And that's one of the things that Coach Harsin was talking about, getting his team ready for the lack of routine that will be the first few weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, I would thoroughly agree with that. As you said, I think the only guaranteed win in that first seven games is Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to put Troy down as a guaranteed deal.
Troy's good.
Yeah, I mean, Boise State should win that football game at home, but I'm not going to be shocked if Troy wins that football game. After that, there's no guaranteed gimmies except for Virginia. I know that's kind of weird considering that's a Power 5 team at home, but Virginia's not very good, and Boise State's going to be able to take care of business. Out of those first seven games, if Brian Harsin goes 6-1 or even 5-2, I think he's set for a big-time season.
All right, this is Coach Harsin talking about that beginning of the season imbalance of the lack of routine and how to overcome it.
This whole camp and this week is simulating our entire first month of the season is what we're doing. So Saturday we did one period live, and then we're coming off simulated Saturday game that goes into that New Mexico Thursday game. So this whole week has been that setup of what do we learn from last year, you know, when we played BYU and we played them on a Thursday. How do we handle going into a short week? All right, so we practice that. And I thought the guys tonight, they came out with great energy. I thought they executed and back and forth. I thought they executed for the most part well. I thought the special team segments, which were not live, were really good. And, you know, there were some guys that stood out. Avery Williams today had two turnovers and a turnover for a touchdown. Sed Wilson had maybe the most spectacular catch I've ever seen. It was phenomenal. And I thought the defense was flying around and tackling the way that we want to. So some positives there. And then in the big scheme of it all, you know, you look at it and there's a ton of things that we got to work on. We're going to take this, and now we have a whole nother segment that we go correct this on Friday. And then Saturday we're going to use that as an evening game simulated when we play late on a Saturday. And then we turn around and we have a Friday scrimmage, which is going to be like our Virginia week, is what it is. So we're simulating those things.
So when you decided you wanted to simulate the short week and the Virginia week, any particular reason maybe you wanted to do that this year as opposed to last year?
We didn't do it last year. And then, yeah, you learned from the BYU week. BYU week, when we played on that Thursday, that was rough. And we won the game. We won the game with five turnovers. All right, we came back the next week and played against Wyoming and did not win that game and had a turnover in the first drive. And so the emphasis that we were trying to create, we got to be better at it. So what do? You learn from those things. You go back, and so you try to simulate that, and you try to get that in the coaches and the players' minds of this is what we're trying to recreate, because we're going to have that situation again. And then we're going to come back and have a game the next week after a Thursday game. So we hadn't played a Thursday for a while, and we played it last year, and now we're playing another one, and we got to be able to recreate it.
So Coach Harsin, that was him yesterday after the closed scrimmage, but using camp to simulate short weeks and the oddity of their beginning of the season schedule where you have Thursday, then Friday, it's I've never really heard of a coach doing that. That's pretty interesting.
No, we certainly don't hear a ton of stories about how coaches adopt or approach fall camp and their strategies. They don't really share that information. I was fascinated by that. I came into our production meeting this morning, and Jeff had already listened to the audio and was all kind of fired up about it. I went and listened to the audio. We just played it here. It's a unique approach, at least for me. Like you said, I've never heard of it. To take it from last week in terms of, or last year, and the crazy schedule that they have, and the Thursdays and the Fridays and the Saturdays and the afternoons and the nights and all that kind of stuff. And maybe this young football team can't handle that. Maybe that last year's old football team couldn't handle it. Mm. Why would we expect a young football team to handle it this year? I don't know if it's an more of experienced staff. I don't know if it's new coaches on the staff. You know, we got Keesaw and Zach Hill and Brian Harsin and all kinds of new guys. Coach Battle, all these guys are coming in with new ideas. Somebody had a great idea. I think it's brilliant.
So to bring this all to a T, from the uncertainty to the lots of newcomers to the schedule to the lack of routine, my question is, what does Coach Harsin and Boise State need to do for him to win the Mountain West Coach of the Year award? Because I feel like if they finish this season with three losses or fewer, it has to be a lock, considering all those adverse situations that I've brought up before. And I don't think he's going to get the credit for it because, again, we're going to – generally, people are going to say, hey, they're Boise State. They're supposed to do this. They were picked to win the Mountain Division. So even if Boise State has a three-loss season and – within those three losses, let's say they win the Mountain Division. I still don't think that'd be enough. You'd find some coach whose team was picked to finish fifth and instead finished second in their division, and we are more likely to give the Coach of the Year and the Conference Award to somebody like that. So we almost punish Coach Harsin, and really in general, coaches for being good at coaching, because if you thought Boise State would be the best team in the Mountain West this year, if you thought that they would have an excellent season, it's because you thought they had a very good coach. So why would you punish the very good coach from getting an award for being a very good coach?
Yeah, first of all, he has to win the Mountain Division. That is absolutely must. Now, you're right, though. That doesn't mean he's going to win it. But if he wins the Mountain Division, the only other coach he's going to be coaching or going against will be Rocky Long, because San Diego State's not going to lose the West. Mm. The West is so, so bad. It would take an act of God for the Aztecs not to win the West. So he's going to win the West. And if Brian Harsin wins the East or the Mountain, then it's a two-person race. He could still lose three games as long as he loses the right three games. You know, obviously.
Just the way it works.
I think it's set up for – this is an important year. I think he can win it, and under that scenario, he should win it. And he, in his mind, I don't know how much he thinks about it, but in the fans' mind, he's 50-50. This is a JP special in terms of how the fans feel about Brian Harsin. If he pulls that scenario off and wins Coach of the Year and does everything you just said, that's a spectacular season for Coach Harsin.
If you have three losses and don't win Coach of the Year, you might get a lot of complaining, but I still would think like this would be – if you navigate this with only three losses or fewer, I don't even care who those losses are against at a certain point. Like, you did work with this team, and we're holding the high expectations and the fact that we think you're a good coach, we're kind of holding that against you. There's a logic behind a coach, speaking of those guys, sitting a rookie quarterback for a year. Does that logic make any sense? We explore that next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Chris and Fish and Prater with Bob Mueller out. I think he'll be back on Monday. He won't make his three-day weekend a four-day weekend.
I like the sound of Chris, Fish, and Prater.
There you go. If you want to, you know, step aside from three to six, but then we'd have to get Bob and Prater and Fish and Chris. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
That's like Knights of the Round Table type stuff. I've watched every national TV preseason game so far. Like, maybe there's something wrong with me.
There's only been two.
There's been three, right? Hall of Fame game.
Oh, okay, you're right.
And then you had the game on Wednesday and then the game yesterday. So I'm 3 for 3 in being able to peep some of the game. Two of those three games included teams with rookie first-round quarterbacks. Deshaun Watson of Houston, and then yesterday Trubisky was on TV with Chi-Town. In fact, all three first-round rookie QBs, if you take a look at them, they'll all probably sit to begin the year, right? Like Deshaun Watson, Tom Savage is a favorite. Correct me if I'm wrong, Fish, but you seem to have some.
That's what DeAndre Hopkins says.
Yep, Tom
Savage. He's the man.
And then Trubisky will probably sit. He's third string right now behind Mark Sanchez and Mike Glennon. And then you have Patrick Mahomes, where nobody thinks he'll play this year because Alex Smith. And even if Alex Smith gets hurt, I think Andy Reid says he just wants Mahomes to sit on there on the bench.
Yep.
So two of them will probably sit for the entire year, and Trubisky and Mahomes. Each preseason broadcast, they've mentioned how beneficial it is for a rookie QB to sit out the whole year. You really hear it every year. Carson Wentz last year, before the Sam Bradford trade, the plan was for him to sit, and everybody was talking about how beneficial it would be for him to sit down. Same with Jared Goff last year. But my question is, why is football the only sport, really quarterback the only position within that sport, where we say a player gets better faster by not playing that sport? Like, we don't do that for anything else. But for football, every year they sell us this thing of, well, this will be so beneficial if they don't play their first year. But that logic, we don't use that anywhere else.
It's changing. It's getting better, I promise you. Way back in the day when you were a kid, because I'm old and you're not, it was automatic. First round, second round, rookie quarterback, I don't care what round. He would come in and hold the clipboard for at least 1 to 2 years. It was pretty automatic. I can't remember the first guy that didn't come in and hold the clipboard, and they made a big deal of it. It's changing. There are certain quarterbacks now, and probably to the detriment of the NFL. Should Jared Goff have been an NFL starting quarterback last year?
I mean,
kind of forced into that.
Well, who was? Case Keenum was starting, and he probably was still better than Case Keenum.
Yeah, probably right. I think the NFL is figuring out because one, quarterbacks are coming out of the league better. Although the style of play, it makes it different for, you know, and the system stuff is going to make it different. And that's why Mahomes may not get on the field much this year. I'm going to disagree with you, though. Based on what I saw last night, I think Mitchell Trubisky starts game one.
Oh, really?
Not even game 16. I think he's going to start game
one. Play well.
Why would you put Glennon in there? I'm not basing it on the fact he threw a pick six on his first pass.
I'd base it off of that because he threw a pick six on his friend. That looked terrible, man.
If the fans may revolt on that. It's certainly not going to start Mark Sanchez. I thought Trubisky, who I've ripped on him pretty hard in the offseason. I was surprised that he went number one. We didn't see much of him in college. He only had, 9-13 starts, whatever the number was. I was impressed. He looked like an NFL veteran quarterback to me, the way he moved around, the poise in the pocket, the athleticism, the accuracy, getting the ball in a tight, tight, tight window. I thought he was phenomenal. And I think he may start game three, where the starters start. I don't know what they're going to think. But if the Bears have any indication of starting anybody else but him, that's a mistake to me.
All right. So I kind of agree. I mean, he looked like he was so much better than Glennon. I just think that they pay Glennon all that money, they'll probably play him. But I don't really want to as much debate will Mike Glennon be the starter or will Trubisky be the starter, as much as I want to talk about the logic. And I'm not doubting the validity of the logic that sitting your first couple of years, or at least your first year, could make you get better faster. But if that logic is true, why wouldn't that logic translate to other sports of it's better for you long term for you to learn for a year? We don't ever talk about that in basketball or baseball. Imagine if an NBA team traded up for a healthy number one pick in the draft and then right after said for his growth, we don't plan on playing him for the first year. Mitch Trubisky was traded up to get him with the number two pick in the draft, and they said immediately, the plan is for us not to play him the first year. If that happened in the NBA, it wouldn't happen, and we'd think it's crazy.
I got two answers to that, or two words to one answer. Physically, even though the NBA is very physical, I get that. It's not an easy game. I'd go out there and break ankles all night long, legs, who knows what else. But physically, obviously, the NFL football, professional football, takes it to another level. So you have to be certain careful with bodies. In the NBA, you're not going to play a guy because the sport is not too physical. Mentally, I also think that becomes an issue. So physically and mentally. In basketball, you can have mental issues can become a part of your game, or you can go into a slump or whatever. If you put a young quarterback in a physical, violent sport and he struggles for 6 weeks, you may lose him for the rest of his career. I don't think you're going to have that kind of risk-reward in the NBA. I don't think you're going to have that kind of a risk-reward in baseball. But baseball is a whole different deal where you go through 3 years of minor league baseball and work your way up for the most part.
But my question is, are we sure that in those other sports that it's not beneficial too? Because you look in the NBA, Blake Griffin sat out his first year, ended up being Rookie of the Year next year.
That's true.
Joel Embiid sat out 2 years. When he played last year, he was a monster. So Julius Randle sat out his rookie year. His next year, he played pretty well that next year. So, again, we have this as accepted knowledge, or accepted logic in the NFL, accepted knowledge that this can help sitting your first year. But we just don't even examine it for the other sports. Could you make the case that it was beneficial for Blake Griffin to mature a little bit more physically while rehabbing from an injury before he played in an NBA game? Did it help Joel Embiid that he spent a couple of seasons working on his game before he was thrown in there? We don't even look at it from that angle.
That's a great point. I mean, that's a great point with those three guys. That's very consistent. And
Aaron Rodgers is the test case. Well, Aaron Rodgers sat, and look at Aaron Rodgers. These NBA players have sat. Ben Simmons will be the test case this year. It's another one where he was a first pick in the draft, sat out a year because of injury. He'll come back this year.
Steve Young, there's certainly other stories that come to mind. I thought you were going to take this argument in another direction, but you're thinking maybe in the NBA they should do it more.
I'm just really questioning the logic. The fascinating thing to me is just what we accept is true in one sport and how we just don't even consider it in the other sport. And we go by two completely different standards, although there's examples each way where it could be the case. That's why, again, I'm not arguing for any one way over the other. I'm just arguing, let's look at the logic behind our blanket statements and actually examine them.
Chris, first of all, we don't do logic around here.
That's always a problem.
So you got a problem there. I think that's a great point. I really do think that that's a great point. I'm not even sure. Maybe it comes down to the individual athlete, maturity, the body maturity, the mental maturity. Are you ready to be a big man in a big-time sport? Certain NFL guys can handle it. Certain guys can't. The NBA maybe needs to take a look more at that. Maybe if you were a smart general manager in the NBA, maybe that's something you need to look at. You know, you don't have to cram that guy. They do it for season ticket sales. They do it for sales. They do it for excitement. You draft the first-round guy in the NBA, you got instant excitement, and you want to see him right off the bat.
Yep. So ticket sales. But if you're in this for the further development, getting your player better, faster, if we accept it in one sport and there's evidence to point to that says it's helpful, there might be evidence to point that it's helpful in the NBA too. We just don't do it. And my whole thing is when it comes to redshirting in college sports, coaches kind of use a similar logic there when it comes to deciding who they're going to redshirt. So if it's an accepted knowledge in college, it's accepted knowledge when it comes to NFL QBs, why can't it be accepted knowledge everywhere else?
In the NBA, as they morph more and more toward this developmental league with 32 or 30 teams.
Yeah.
Is it 30 teams?
Yeah, 30.
30 teams and 30 development teams, G League teams, not Gatorade League teams. Maybe they do that more. Maybe they take that first guy and start him off in the G League and move him up. I don't know.
It doesn't seem like it'll ever happen because it sounds crazy.
But
also, it's accepted in one sport. Let's go to the phone, 208-424-9300. CJ has an opinion on this whole, well, we accept it in one sport, but it's crazy in the other. Topic, CJ, you're on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
You know, the first thing when I think of when it comes to football is how you can take someone that was completely proficient in what they did for the last probably 10 years of their life, and then you put them in, you know, somebody else's system, be it college or football, or NFL or anything, and you could have a guy that may be one of the best talents in the league, but it still might take him 6 months to a year to understand someone's brand-new offensive schemes or defensive schemes and things like that. But with basketball, baseball, it is very rare that you get above college and don't understand basically every aspect. And it's not like they're coming up with new plays. Basketball maybe have a slightly different system, but look how easily Kevin Durant transferred into a completely different offense in one season.
Yeah, I mean, where I would disagree is I think you're just kind of dismissing the concepts that are in basketball. Like, I can argue that freshmen that come into the NBA after their freshman year, they have no idea how to play defense. They have no idea NBA defensive schemes. They have no idea about pick and roll coverage. So if they were to sit out a year and better themselves in those departments, just like we tell NFL quarterbacks, it might be better for you to sit out a year to learn the system, learn your receivers, learn where to go with checkdowns and all that. Like, the same logic can be applied to, for example, an NBA point guard who has to learn all these similar things.
Agreed, but take an NFL quarterback that comes in, starts his first year, right? Let's say he throws 12 picks and 10 touchdowns or something. He has a horrible year, but hey, you know what? He might get better. That might ruin his whole career. That might ruin the entire lifespan if he only works there for 3 or 6 years. But you take someone like a Joel Embiid or whatever, like, they may have a crappy first season or two, but they're not giving up this guy. They've already got committed money to him. You know, so that first year, if there isn't a great success, football is something that you could lose your entire career if you don't come out with flying colors.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd. Like, you know, D'Angelo Russell, for example, the Lakers played him quite a bit. Well, actually, they could have played him more. That's probably not the best example. Let's go Brandon Ingram. The Lakers played Brandon Ingram quite a bit his rookie year. He struggled. Nobody's saying that, like, he's mentally shot for the rest of his career like you would do for a quarterback. Brandon Ingram basically had the NBA season equivalent of an NFL quarterback that had 10 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. He shot a terrible percentage. He was awful at defense. But nobody's saying that Brandon Ingram can't play. His confidence, his ruined confidence, will negatively impact his entire career going forward. But we would say that with an NFL QB. Are we just placing our narratives onto people without having anything to really back it up? Or do we actually believe that's the case, where an NFL quarterback is so mentally weak that he can't overcome a bad year, while an NBA star player is mentally strong enough to overcome that year?
Yeah, I think that a basketball player also gets more chances over 80 games to show that he's not just having a crappy season, but he has these bursts of, you know, really good moments. Like, okay, this is a guy, we're going to develop him a little bit longer. But if you get, you know, 16 games, if six of those are really bad, I mean, you're going to judge him on those six games. You're barely going to remember the names, you know, he got through, but I don't know. Thanks for the time, guys.
No, yeah, no problem. I like the discussion. I like the back and forth. Thanks, CJ. Leaves the phone lines open, 208-424-9300. There's no real right answer or wrong answer to this. I just like talking through the decision-making process.
No, but if I was an NBA GM, I would put on my favorite Billy Bean hat and try to do something different now that you think, I mean, you sparked something for me in terms of NBA general managers and franchises, when they get these new young hotshot guys, the most important year is the first year. Maybe they should think about maybe the most important year being the 12th year.
Don't get a busy signal. Make sure you dial 208 before you call or text the ticket. You now have to dial 208-424-9300 to call or text Sports Radio the ticket or anyone else with a 208 area code. Make it 208 when you dial in the state. Up next, we have a sports update.
Well, we got more Broncos in the NFL tonight, plus an update on the PGA Championship. The big names rising to the top. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
The Ticket Sports Update.
This Ticket Sports Update, sponsored by Big Judd. It's better than a sliced pickle. It's Big Judd's bearded, breaded pickle spear fried to perfection. Big Judd's on Overland near Eagle Road in protest near Boise State. Three NFL preseason games tonight featuring a total of eight players with connections to Idaho, including former Broncos Darian Thompson, Dante Dion, Jonathan Moxie, Jeremy McNichols, Doug Martin, and George Aloka, and Chancellor James, and then Idaho State grad Evan Smith. Last night, several players from Idaho were in action. However, bad news for one, former Bronco and current Bronco, Billy Winn, was carted off the field with a knee injury. Has been reported by several sources, and Ian Rappaport was the first to report it. Torn ACL in his right knee, out for the season.
That's rough. Now you just hope those other guys that you listed, they stay healthy through this first preseason matchup. If you had to say, all right, one guy you want to zone in on Prater to watch in the preseason, like if you could have a positional camera on one dude of the Boise State and Idaho State players for tonight, who would you pick?
For tonight, well, let's see if Jeremy McNichols even gets on the field. Sometimes you can tell if he gets on the field. Doug Martin will not. Moxie, it doesn't really matter. I don't think he's going to make the team. Chancellor James is coming off in an emotional week in which he just, he didn't blindside anybody. He got involved in an accidental collision and an emotional player. So that was an emotional deal for the 49ers. If he gets on the field and chance to play and looks like he's himself.
Yeah.
But I'll keep an eye on McNichols. I just want to see him get on the field. I want to see him get a chance. The Buccaneers have a lot of running backs. I think they have six or seven running backs. I'm not sure if Rodgers is going to play. Sims might get some stuff. And then there's some players in there as well. Martin won't play, so we'll look for that. The bigger question is, if you've watched all three live national broadcasts so far, there's two tonight. You going to be able to sneak in both of them?
Ooh. This is a doubleheader, right?
It's a doubleheader. Steelers and Giants at 5. You can watch Darian and Dante Dion in that game at 5 on the NFL Network. And then it must be one of those cramped joint and progress deals. But at 7 o'clock, the 49ers at the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, I'll be going camping, so I can't really watch.
Oh.
I don't got the portable NFL Network app on my phone, and I don't know if it'll be in cell phone
Come
range.
On.
So what happened here? You're going camping, which is what I usually do on the weekends.
And you're watching football?
And I'm going to stay home and watch football.
We have traded lives. You've seen the show Wife Swap, right? This is Life Swap.
I'm hosting
1-3. One of these days I'll host 3-6, and we're swapping lives.
I wouldn't mind getting younger, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it sounds like I'm getting the short end of this.
Yeah, you're going to get old and fat.
Well, the big news of the day, Ezekiel Elliott has been suspended by the NFL 6 games for violating the league's conduct policy stemming from an investigation over a year ago when he was accused of domestic assault on his ex-girlfriend back in Ohio. An interesting note, most sports books in Vegas have halted betting on both the Cowboys' Week 1 game against the Giants, where they're 4.5-point favorites, and their season win total for their 9.5 wins because they want to hear what's going to happen with appeals before they let people start betting the under and win a bunch of money.
Yeah, I would see why you would take that off the board with this appeal pending. Now, I will say, Dallas, out if he's out these 6 games, which is really 7 weeks, your fantasy team is done. You can't draft Ezekiel Elliott, right? Like, you can't have him as your number one or number two running back. He's missing more than half the season for fantasy purposes.
As sad as it sounds, we got this domestic violence issue here in this country and domestic violence issue in the National Football League. But all three of us play fantasy football, and I promise you that was one of the first things on all three of our minds when we heard this news.
We're talking about his impact on the NFL right now, not to mitigate the big issue of domestic violence. But, we did want to bring up the fantasy implications. And how about NFL implications? Does this cost Dallas the division? NFC East competitive. As much as Dallas had 13 wins and ran away with it, we did think that there'd be regression to the mean anyway. Philly, Carson Wentz looked not half bad in his last preseason game yesterday. Giants, I thought, would be better anyway. If you have Zeke Elliott, who could have been the MVP last year, out for half a year, six games, yeah, that's enough to make me think that the Giants could take this division.
Real quick, the first game is against the Giants in Dallas. They could sneak. Giants could already just lob one up and get one win there. Second game is at Denver. That's no cakewalk, even if you have Elliott. Then you're at Arizona Cardinals. Who knows what happens there. Rams at home. That should be okay. Packers at home. Who knows? And then at the 49ers. So that's a tough schedule. This could mean one or two losses. This could mean the difference of them winning the division. There's no doubt about that, but I'm still more concerned about the fantasy elements.
You read the schedule, and what was the fifth game of the year?
Versus the Packers.
What do we think might happen here? I'm guessing a suspension reduced to four games, and he's coming back against the Packers. Is that a Sunday Night Football game?
No, it's a 2 o'clock national broadcast on Fox.
Can they flex that early in the season?
They can't.
Flex that down to 8 o'clock.
This is the big national Fox games, though. Fox is going to protect this game. So Fox wants it. Cowboys, Packers. Yeah, Zeke will be back for that.
I totally agree.
I think they'll give him three. He needs a warm-up game. You can't just send him in cold.
No, that's more hype. More hype is that this is the first chance to see Zeke this season. That's absolutely going to happen.
And we'll end the sports update. PGA Championship in progress, though play has been suspended due to storms in the area. Kevin Kisner, your leader, 8-under, but he's only got a 2-shot lead now ahead of Hideki Matsuyama, 6-under par. 5-under par on the day, but play has been suspended with several golfers such as Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, all still on the course. Not sure if they're going to finish today, but storms in the area, so we'll keep you updated on that. I'm sure JP's all over it. So, JP's got his weather map for the entire United States out, monitoring when they're going to start play again.
So you're saying there's something that Jason Day and Ezekiel Elliott have in common? They're both suspended? There you go.
Boom.
Up next on Idaho Sports Talk, things that we learned in our wonderful 2 hours on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
And it's time to find out what we learned today on Idaho Sports Talk. No Bobby's out, so Prater, Chris, and Fish. Sponsored by ProAb Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories. Located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. I was all fuddled up because I was just thinking about that Cedric Wilson catch that we'll never get to see.
Wow.
That's the one thing we learned. Boise State had a close scrimmage last night. Apparently Cedric Wilson had one of the greatest catches ever. And Coach Harsin maybe moonlighting as Bob Beeler because he gave us the play-by-play call.
Yeah, it's hard to describe. Yeah, that's one. It was a little fade ball, and it was back, kind of a back shoulder ball, and went up and he elevated. I don't know how high. He elevated, and it was one of those kind of behind the back, behind the head, stuck in the palm, and defenders kind of got his legs out from underneath him, and he comes down with the foot in bounds and with the ball in his hands. It was everybody out there, defense, didn't matter who you were, all right, whatever family members were in there, I mean, they dropped whatever they had in their hands, and it was a great play.
We got the round of applause in there and everything, so we have now officially put the Cedric Wilson close scrimmage fall camp catch in the same category as the Dream Team in 1992 playing their inter-squad scrimmage that nobody saw, but it was the most legendary game in basketball history. Competitiveness off the charts. We put the Wilson catch in that category. We put it in the same category as the Wilt Chamberlain 100-point game because, hey, we might not have seen – nobody might have seen the 100-point game unless you were there at the moment. But, hey, it continues to live on because it's a legend. Also, you mentioned the Babe Ruth calling a shot. Cedric Wilson catch, same thing. It's just like that. In fact, it was better than Michael Jordan stretching his hands out in Space Jam and dunking from half court.
I like it. The way he described it, I was trying to take individual set words and move my body with them and palm this and right shoulder, back shoulder that, and I ended up like in a game of Twister with myself, so I'm not exactly sure how that works, but I'm going to be with you. I'm going to put it down into the legendary category, the greatest catch of this 2017 season.
Let's do it. All right, so now it is officially 3-6 because we have Caves and Prater both on the radio, so I don't know what to do here. I should just fade out. It's you two's turn.
What, do you want me to argue?
All right. I'm sliding out. Caves and Prater just start 7 minutes early.
Well, I'm sure there's ways we can accommodate that. Don't want you to get too huffy. Although you two people together, I have my own thoughts about you, your political thoughts, and you, your political thoughts. You guys are two peas in a pod, by the way. Did you know that?
I don't know if that's good or bad.
I don't know.
We did talk to people.
We did a life swap today, and you know, I learned that I didn't really want to be Prater. You know, I don't want to be old and fat. We explored this possibility. I didn't like it too much.
I like the idea of being young, skinny, and athletic.
Yeah. Well, we got to get back into Ezekiel Elliott. I hope you guys didn't get too far from it.
No.
What a complicated issue, depending upon your viewpoint. And we'll spend time there, of course. And I think it depends on who you are and how you feel about it. I don't really care, but that shouldn't surprise you. And I think most people don't. Additionally, though, Brian Harsin and how he's putting his practices together and what this may mean for the football team or what it may not mean, but it's certainly a big effort. So we'll get into all that stuff here in just a couple minutes.
All right, looking forward to it. And now Prater's going to have to switch seats and everything.
I like it.
You like switching seats, or do you want to hold on to that?
Never done it before. It's about to happen.
All right, did you put any booby traps, whoopee cushion? We turned the mics off over there. Case can't hear us anymore. So what did you do to that chair to make it, you know?
Yeah, I played around with his computer a little bit. I moved some bookmarks around.
Okay, good. You had to mess with it. Did you change his Twitter picture?
No, I did not. That would have been a good idea.
All right. Well, it was a pleasure, Prater. I've been waiting for this.
Thanks for babysitting me today. I appreciate your help.
Thanks for filling in. Bob will be back Monday. So will I. So will Fish. Full squad. And on Monday, Mike Renner, Pro Football Focus. We mentioned all these Boise State players. Mike Renner will tell us, hey, what does this preseason mean? How'd they do? So again, Monday. Listen for that. Gaze and Prater coming up next. Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.